Hello, this is Paul Frazee.
Hi, Paul. It's Greg Kellogg here.
Hi, Greg. How are you doing?
Good. And are you on IRC, Paul?
I am. I'm in the JSON LD
I
channel
see
on
that you're.
Freenode right now.
Yep, great. Oh, Paul Frazee. Okay, sorry. Got it there.
And I uh,
P for.
hey, Manu here.
Hey, Manu.
Hey, Greg. I am not on the JSON LD IRC channel. Oh no, sorry, Freenode. Never mind.
I see you.
Yeah, there we are. It's here somewhere buried. Did I hear Paul? Yes, how are you doing, Manu? Hi, wonderful. Good to hear your voice. Yeah. And then, is Tara on yet? No, Tara will be joining us. Okay, all right. Okay, I mean, we could, well, let's see, what's the time? Let's give people a little bit of time to show up. I think we're expecting kind of a live call today. Yeah. You're based in Austin, is that right? That's correct. Okay, cool. My sister lives in Austin. But I have not been Well, down there in like years. if you ever come How by, let us know. We'll grab a drink. Hey, that'd be awesome. And I guess you've been in Austin for a while, is that right? I think it's been maybe 6 years now. Okay, great. And is Beaker your full-time gig right now? Yeah, Tara and I are both Okay. full-time on Beaker. Okay, awesome. I was reading a bit. I mean, I spent a bit of time reading about kind of where the project came from, and read a bit about DAP and that kind of stuff to try and understand the landscape a bit more. Unfortunately, did not get a chance to download and try it out, but I think I get the general concept. And also noticed that Juan Bennett. I think Juan Bennett was with DAP, not Beaker, but I know Juan pretty well from IPFS fame. Yeah, I'll I walk don't over Juan know. and what Juan's been working Okay. on. Okay. Great. Great. If you don't mind, I mean, maybe we could start off with you giving us a bit of a background on kind of the. I'm aware of the general problem, but more kind of decentralized web, problem. I mean, from the looks of it, Beaker is focused on enabling people to effectively create sites on the web in a fully decentralized way, such that you can kind of publish a site using like content addressing. You can update it and new revisions and so on and so forth. It stays private until you share the link, that kind of stuff. I'm wondering about like any other technology related to that. Like, for example, we are part of kind of the credentials community group that's got 125 plus, folks kind of in there. We're focused on things like decentral. I mean, everyone there is a big fan of decentralizing the web. But we're also working on things like decentralizing identity and identifiers, new cryptography mechanisms that make trust at a distance easier to do. We started the web payments work, which was supposed to be about making sure that we help the world's unbanked and underbanked, basically help everyone come online from a financial perspective and engage economically. I wondered, how much overlap is there between kind of Beaker's goals and these other goals? Because there's a pretty, we've got a pretty decent sized community that really cares about this stuff that, maybe deeper collaboration with Beaker, would make sense. The focus that we're starting with is primarily to do with publishing. So this would be being able to construct websites and different kinds of media and content and be able to publish it from your own device without having to engage with a third-party service at all. So that's the, you could argue that's the sort of foundational concept behind what Beaker is focusing on, particularly with the DAT technology. From there, it's possible to create beyond websites and asset hosting through the peer-to-peer network, it's possible to create applications. And the application stack will grow over time. At the moment, what we're doing is seeing how much utility we can get purely out of the DAT network as a sort of data store and distribution system. And so if you have DAT as the mechanism for distributing websites and applications, you then have web APIs, which the applications can access for reading and writing and watching files on the DAT network. And through that, you can build a class of applications, probably the more in line with things like social networking, office software, and publishing in general. And so this has led to a couple of early applications along those lines. In fact, we have at this point two sort of social networking applications, one of them which is a intentionally tries to mimic Twitter in a lot of ways, another one which is conceptually similar but which kind of deviates much more in its interface. Now, the way that the data network works out is primarily it's a file system that's shared over the network. Applications are reading and writing files and also actively watching the files for changes, and that's how they can get real-time reactivity. And so these files are, you know, they can be any kind of data you want. They're just blobs, but the choice we've used, unsurprisingly, is JSON. And so what happens is that applications will scan each other's, you know, you'll, for instance, in these social applications, you'll follow each other's websites. You'll scan the websites for JSON files and watch for changes to them and then pick those up and integrate them into a database of some kind in, on IndexedDB, for instance, and use that as the content, right?
Okay.
So we have these JSON files being shared by all these applications, and as you almost certainly can predict, eventually we run into questions about how we coordinate the schemas between these applications.
Right.
And that is how we got to where we are today, where the conversation about JSON-LD started.
Right.
Now I can go ahead and straight into that, or I could explain a little bit more about our project at a high level and where we're headed with it and the overlap with, for instance, the credentials group, if you're interested.
Let's talk a bit about that before we kind of...
In there, I see we have another caller, 313 area code, just to get a name in there.
Yes, this is Jamie Pitts. I'm represent the Ethereum Foundation at the W3C.
Right.
Oh, cool. Hi, Jamie.
Hi.
Good to have you here. And I'm sorry. I should have. Greg, did you and Paul have a chance to kind of do intros to each other?
No. We pretty much just dived into the subject. My name's Greg Kellogg. I'm the one that's been leading most of the efforts on the updates to JSON-LD for the ongoing community group in the 1.1 effort. And there is, if you didn't see, there is a there's a charter out for discussion to charter a new W3C working group to move forward JSON-LD from what the community group has done potentially and certainly from its 1.0 roots. So this is certainly timely. And I encourage you and anyone else that has input, positive or negative, on JSON-LD to consider participating in the community group. We're actually using IRC to log communications, and these get turned into meeting notes that get put out there, which is a standard practice for W3C working groups and community groups. So by encouraging people with diverse backgrounds to collaborate, we can really come forward with the best possible thing, both as an output of the community group and as input and hopefully output from an eventual working group.
Absolutely. And Paul, you will probably find no one more well versed than Greg is when it comes to, you know, all this stuff, you know, how to get data published either in a centralized or decentralized way to play well with one another. Greg's implemented, I think, just about every part of the RDF Link data stack and has a tremendous history with W3C, kind of helping make sure that you know these technologies and specifications reflect you know what's happening out there in the real world. You know, it's that it meets developers' needs and expectations. So that's good. We've got Jamie. Do you want to give a quick intro to yourself as well?
Sure. Briefly, I work at the Ethereum Foundation in DevOps. And I represent them to the W3C, so I monitor W3C proceedings. I'm working on a metadata project that involves JSON-LD, so I'm very interested in, you know, how you reach out to people about how they're using it and if they have objections to the structure of it, and in metadata in general. So that's, I guess that's good background on me.
Okay, great. Welcome. Had someone else join OverSIP. Is that you again, Greg, or
that's
who just joined OverSIP? Nope. And there they go.
They're gone.
Probably connection issue. Just like that. Okay. So you know, maybe we could. I want to make sure that we get to your current concerns, Paul. So maybe what we could do is I want to maybe open up with just some general framing and then kind of really dive into it, right? So I did a thorough read through your README and the design document and that I think it was issue 820 or whatever on the Beaker browser thing. So I've read as much as I could, at least on that, and I believe I understand the problem space and a number of your concerns. Just high-level thoughts as I was reading through it. All of your design goals, like these are the problems that we're trying to address, these are the things that we're concerned about. There's a tremendous amount of overlap with JSON-LD, right? So, you know, when we were putting the spec together, when we were building the technology out, I mean, many of those same problems are problems that we hit and we needed a solution for. And I'm not saying there's 100% overlap. Like, there's 20% there where when I read it, I was like, oh, that's interesting. Like, that's an interesting new way of looking at it, and I could see how JSON-LD might not be a good fit there. But for everything else, I know that there's a desire there to have JSON-LD applicable to that problem set. So, you know, it may be that, you know, either it's currently really difficult to do through the software libraries, or we haven't exposed it in the right way, or it's just like a trick that we've got in the back of our minds that we know how to apply JSON-LD in that way, but it's just not evident to people just picking it up and taking a look at it. So I'm interested in kind of having a chat around those things. The other thing that I hope you'll find from this community is that we strive very hard to try and not beat people over the heads with JSON-LD, right? I mean, it's like, here's a tool set. Like, if it's useful for you, great. If it's not useful for you, we will try really hard to fix something if it seems like a valid, like, use case that we want to support. But there may be a point at which we're like, you know what, it's a totally different problem that you're trying to solve, or there's enough that's different that we can't really shift JSON-LD, you know, away from what it's doing right now, right? The other thing I think to keep in mind with JSON-LD is, like, there's, like, a tremendous amount of, like, community input, right? So, you know, it does more than any one of us wants it to do, but those features are in there because there was some fairly sizable community that was like, you know, they wanted the feature in there. So And that's kind of what, you know, the JSON-LD1-1 stuff that Greg's been working on, a lot of it is like feedback. Like, we put JSON-LD1-0 out there. It's now used by, I think, 10% of all domains, at the least 10% of all domains, at the most 19% of all domains, publish JSON-LD in one form or another. Mostly it's like, I want to get a better Google search ranking, and I know Google indexes JSON-LD in pages, so they end up putting like business addresses, phone numbers, store hours, things like that in there. But a large chunk of, you know, the internet is now, you know, publishing data in this way, and that tends to be like the biggest kind of users of JSON-LD right now are in the kind of, I want Bing and Google to pick up my website and pull these data elements from it, and so I'm going to be explicit and spell it out in the web page. The other class of people that are using JSON-LD tend to be data scientists, you know, people that are publishing incredibly large medical data sets, governments publishing a large amount of like government open data, and things of that nature. So things where like semantics are like super, super important, and getting it wrong is really bad. Like, you know, in medical research, really bad to mix up your mix up the semantics in your data. Government, data, same kind of thing. So that's kind of, you know, the who's using JSON-LD right now, and kind of the way we approach JSON-LD like problems. That's just the background. Like, you know, if you feel like we're hitting you over the head with JSON-LD, please let us know, because we don't want to do that. Like I said, in the worst case, we transfer some knowledge to you, and you're able to use that in the Beaker community and build something that really works for the Beaker community. And with that, I'll be quiet.
Cool. Well, first of all, let me just say that, you know, I hold a huge amount of respect both for the amount of time and effort that you all have put into this, but also to the amount of effort that the community at large has put in. And so I definitely want to make sure that I'm listening to everything you have to say and not missing anything that's important. So I'm starting from that point. Mm-hmm. Now, with let me turn off the sound here. With this project, you know, I once this got started, I went around and talked to a few people trying to pull some opinions from our community, and really sort of saw two overriding responses. People who either had used RDF in some form, either JSON-LD or something else, truly understood where its utility comes in and thought it was a great tool set. And then people mm-hmm. who had perhaps partially heard about it, had looked at it once, didn't see the utility, and very much disliked it. And whether or not those opinions were well-formed or not, there is a degree to which the community just has an emotional reaction. And so in part, what I'm navigating is trying to understand where the real problems are versus where perception is the problem.
Yep.
And perception can, of course, be changed.
Yep.
Now, specifically for the project that we have, the requirements are, I think, perhaps a little bit unique compared to, or maybe just a little bit unique compared to how mm-hmm. JSON-LD has been used in the past. The first thing I would say is that in the kind of service of making publishing easy, we sort of in the same vein are looking to make application development very easy mm-hmm. and very accessible to people. And we want to engender a community where people feel very open to crack open the source code to an application and right. start making changes to it. And that's sort of a key kind of principle of the tool set, is that you can have the source code readily available for a website, and you can jump in and start making changes.
Yep.
And so this creates two pretty highly important requirements for us. The first is ease of use and understanding for a programmer, really of all skill levels, whether you're new or advanced. Even the advanced users, we want to be able to have just a good time. We don't want this to be work for them. It's really meant to be more right. of a kind of deprofessionalized and casual, enjoyable programming experience. And right. so the accessibility of the tool set is extremely important to us. So that's requirement number one. Requirement number two is that we need to make sure that we have the extensibility use case in mind almost always, because almost certainly if we have people, you know, with the design of these applications, the source code is no longer centrally controlled for an application. The expectation is, you know, in almost sort of like a worst case scenario, everybody has their own client with a different code base.
Right.
And so the challenge that we have to sort of be prepared for is that everybody had their own data model that they're working with internally and their own opinions about how it gets, that data model gets used, and we need to make sure that they all work together well.
Right.
So not only do we need to be very easy to approach and understand, but we also have to be expecting arbitrary extension to be occurring to the schemas almost constantly.
Yes.
And with that in mind, we went into the, you know, began evaluating JSON-LD to see what the options are and whether it would be a good fit. And at the end of the day, I suppose we walked away with a couple of observations. The first is that, and I'm going to be reiterating a little bit of what's published in the JSON LZ, I'll call it LAZY to be a little more clear. LAZY is a spec that I threw together that is exploratory. What I'm trying to do is understand the requirements and design needs and maybe put together a spec for how schemas can be authored.
Right.
And so that was, putting that out there was actually what triggered this, because then we had some JSON LD folks begin to say, wait, don't create another spec.
Right.
So with LAZY, there was a couple of principles that I was aiming at, which is making sure that the metadata information about schema and namespaces and vocabulary, making sure that it doesn't have to be premeditated. That's
mm-hmm.
probably the most important thing that I came away from this with, is thinking that people are probably not going to invest consistently and reliably in putting together meta information about their vocabularies. And so we need to make sure that we build the tooling in such a fashion that people can sort of almost paint over previously published
right.
content with meta information at a later date. Sort of in that same vein, I'm concerned about any kind of schema format which requires upfront tooling, because I think the expectation we have to have is that engineers will not prepare with the tooling and would have to integrate it later. So if we can avoid having situations, if we can minimize the amount of tooling that's needed, things will be better. That's not as important as being able to paint on metadata at a later date, but it still seems
right.
somewhat important to me.
Right.
And I think that pretty much covers the sort of high-level thinking I have about the design space here.
Sure. Let me kind of respond really quickly to that. So that's one of the things, you know, reading through what he had written, that's one of the things that struck me as, like, it's the same design space, right? So it, JSON, I can understand why someone that takes a look at JSON LD thinks there has to be this premeditated, schema discussion before apps are created, and unfortunately, I think that's it's been lost over the years, right? So when we were first designing JSON LD, we basically said the same thing. It's you know, web developers are used to JSON, like, don't break away from that. Meaning, like, make
right,
sure that
right.
JSON LD is this additive thing. Don't make people have to be forced to use a JSON LD processor if they don't need to. And a number of the people that, you know, have been building applications, like, if you look at the ActivityPub, you know, spec, it doesn't say you have to use JSON LD processor, and in fact, it doesn't say you have to use a context, right? It's your schema equivalent. Like, you don't have to state that at all. You can just start
right.
using it, and when you start using it, you know, if something processes you know, these ActivityPub messages in such a way that it understands extensions, then it will inject you know, kind of like the global ActivityPub context in there. And in the same way, we couldn't do that in the base JSON-LD spec, right? So that's something that specs that layer on top of JSON-LD have to do. And we've seen that as a design pattern where people basically say, look, you know, we know everybody just uses JSON and we don't want to force JSON-LD tooling on people. So for all data that's processed by this specification, let's say it's a Beaker specification, the Beaker data specification or whatever, we assume this context. And that context, the only thing that context may do is it can say, hey, by the way, there's this Beaker data namespace, and if you don't specify where your data should be, it just goes in the Beaker data namespace. Right. It's just a holding area. And by doing that, you're like compatible with all other linked data on the planet immediately. Right. And there's quite a bit of it out there. So like that's one like design trick that people have been using that allows you to kind of be a bit lazy in how you approach this, right? And let me give you some other examples. So you know, we have a number of for-profit companies. We have a couple of nonprofits, a couple of for-profits. The for-profits use JSON-LD in the commercial products that we have. And usually when we're developing those products, the schema is the last thing we do. So usually we start up, like we're all MongoDB based, like, you know, the developers and the engineers, they just start churning out code and figuring out what the data structures and everything should look like, and everyone's just thinking JSON. And it's only during the very last bits do we actually start locking things down. In fact, internally what we do is we say, we just got this default namespace that everything just is dumped into. And then as people, as we figure out the proper scope of things and as we're moving closer to production, that's when we'll actually go in and really start saying, okay, this term belongs in this schema, this term belongs in that schema, and so on and so forth. That's how we try to address the kind of like the progressive enhancement mechanism that you're talking about. But again, like, I don't know if that's going to work for your community. Anyway, some thoughts on that.
It might. Yeah, let me toss out a couple of specific things. One is that one thing I know that I get a strong reaction from engineers from, especially people who haven't spent a whole lot of time in the RDF or linked data community, so they're not entirely, like, one of the things that happens is that people look at it and they don't understand what the sort of value proposition is in the first place, and so they see syntax and they kind of just go, oh, I don't know what this is. So one thought I have is a way to sort of short-circuit that might be to avoid, this is funny, but the at symbol being in the schema. Now, I'm not suggesting we get rid of it. I think what we might be able to do if we do go with JSON-LD, is use mechanisms similar to the link header specifying context, which allows the context to be kind of painted on externally. If we can, we could probably in the Beaker ecosystem find similar mechanisms by which we specify the metadata without having to bring in any syntax whatsoever into the actual objects, which would have a dual value of avoiding any syntax in the objects that's confusing, and also making it so that the published information is kept separate from the schema information, which they can change independently.
Right. So one mechanism that we've used. So in the very beginning of JSON-LD, the biggest pushback that we got was, hey, you know, you're going to paint stuff on top of existing JSON out there, and they might use type, or we can guarantee you that somebody's using ID and somebody's using type. So you can't do anything to squat on those names. You're going to destroy data. Right. And that's where kind of this at syntax came from. It was like, okay, well, we've got to do something. But then, you know, the pushback, as you found, is like people are like, I don't want app syntax in my JSON objects. It's not JSON, right?
Yeah.
So what we do in the context is we use keyword aliasing. So we alias at ID to ID. We alias at type to type. So all those apps disappear. The only place that we can't do that is with at context. Right, but to address the at context thing, we do the link header thing, right? So we can mention what the context is out of bands, either in an HTTP header, I think we use a rel for that, and then you can specify it as a part of the specification. So if the context doesn't exist, you just assume a context. And we've seen that work well. So that like removes all the at signs. The other thing that you get pushback on is like, oh, you're using namespaces. That's gross. You know, namespaces are terrible.
Right.
That's debatable, right? But let's say JSON developers, they don't want foo colon bar in anywhere in their markup, right?
Yeah.
Not in the key.
Yes.
So what we basically say is like, well, you know, we use, they're called JSONLD terms, but we basically say, look, you know, you can prefix everything, you can namespace things, and there are some developers that prefer that. They usually come from like the RDS linked data background. But for everyone else, it's just words, right? It's description and URL and website, and there's no schema colon website, no schema colon whatever. And we just suggest people like just stick the keywords, right? Because it looks like JSON when you do that. And anything that includes, you know, dots in the names is, you know, problematic when it comes to MongoDB. Anything that's got colons looks unnatural to JSON developers. So there are things that you can do in the JSONLD context that'll alias all the app keywords away. Now there's some exceptions to that, but those are like super corner cases that, you know, I would imagine most in your community, you know, wouldn't hit.
If you don't mind, I have a point to make on that, which is the aliasing is actually quite close to what we need. The remaining problem, and I don't know how you'll respond to this suggestion, but the one of the remaining problems is that you can individually alias one keyword or I'm sorry, I don't know, but maybe it's a term to a specific namespace identifier, but to do a sort of like broad stroke of multiple, like the following terms belong to one namespace, you have to use the prefixing right now. So correct me if I'm wrong, but I think this would, if you're not going to use the prefixes, you're going to have to specify every single term that's being used in your JSON.
You can use vocab. So at vocab is the hammer for that. So but you can only have one of them, right? So if you're like every single thing here belongs here, it's a hammer, and everything dumps in it. That's kind of like what schema.org does, right? Schema.org has thousands upon thousands of attributes.
Yeah, there is a change in 1.1 that allows you to create these scoped contexts. So, for instance, you might have, if you're particularly, this comes in when you're sort of including data from different locations. So in one place you might have a term like identifier that means something quite particular. For instance, identifier might simply be the same as ID for that community. But now you go into some other property, and maybe you're in a location where you might need something else, which you could previously have solved by just introducing an inline context, but with the scope context mechanism, that allows you to separate that on a given property. So, for instance, I think there's examples that are in the spec now where you set at vocab, say, to schema.org, but now you're including as a value in it something that comes from something else, say, foaf, and you can say, okay, well, now interpret all terms that aren't otherwise defined relative to the FOF vocabulary. So that's something that I think is a way to use the vocab mechanism, but have the things sort of logically resolved to different namespaces without the actual data users having to worry about it.
Okay. I'll take a look at that in 1.1. I think I found the link to it, so I should be able to. It's published in the that's published in the current working draft.
Yeah, I can find a link for you here.
Okay. Yeah, the solution that I was toying with in Lazy was to have a sort of path, a JSON path specification with globs in it, which is one way to go at it, certainly. I don't at all want to suggest that I think this is a great solution, but it had the advantage of being able to sort of paint over multiple different attributes with a minimal number of declarations of the schema. Did that make sense, Mammy, when you saw that? Do you understand what I was going for with that?
Yeah, so I understood what you were going for. That came up when we were working on kind of the JSON-LD vocab stuff. I forget,
right.
I mean, and it was just like one or two conversations. And the danger that the working group found there was like people doing the wrong globbing pattern and accidentally stomping over way too much, right? So regexes are hard, globbing patterns are a bit easier, but people still kind of screw them up. And you know, because there was such a focus on ensuring that the semantics are right, if you define the semantics that they're right, we chose to not add that feature to the specification. And the the natural result of that is like your context can get fairly large. But in practice what we've seen is that the amount of data that you need for like true interoperability between applications tends to be fairly small, right? So if you look at like a tweet or, you know, a Facebook post or anything like that, you know, or ActivityPub, right? ActivityPub's a good example. If you look at what they actually went in and standardized, it's a handful of terms, like it's a handful of attributes. Schema.org is like the extreme, right? Because schema.org is like a dumping ground for every, like the world's, kind of the world's terms. And in that case, they're like, okay, well, we're going to just do, add vocab because our application space is totally cool with there being a giant, you know, everyone shares the namespace. So, you know, I understand where you're going with globbing. I understand the desire to minimize the context sizes, but you know, frankly, when engineers pick up and start using JSON-LD, like they stop caring about the size of the context, right? Because you know, gzip, it's not going to be any larger than a couple of K in size, you know, and that's for really sizable context, and your processors. You know, not going to blink. You know, it's you're adding like a couple of milliseconds to processing times, if that, right? At least that's where we are today. You know, it's I would imagine that, you know, if we brought up globbing patterns in the 1.1 working group, we'd be hit with the same kind of you know, arguments against, which is. You know, why is it so much more difficult to do either add vocab or list every single one out? If you're going to go to the effort for writing a context, why don't you just write the context once, even if there's like 100 terms that you have to define? At least, you know, there's a small group defining those terms without using a glob pattern. Anyway, that's kind of where we got to there.
This is one of those things where I completely, I think your argument against it is actually sound, and it may come to pass that this isn't a significant thing, but I will say that it is also the sort of thing that if it were possible, I know that engineers would appreciate it in certain situations, and that's where my head's at in terms of trying to make engineers as happy as possible.
Yes.
So I wouldn't make this a blocker necessarily, but I would suggest that it kind of sit in the back of folks' minds as if usability ends up continuing to be a thing that's brought up by engineers a lot. Maybe
right.
Think about it. And I think the it doesn't
well,
one,
hey,
one of
Paul?
The risks. Sorry.
Well, the way that the group thinks about it is by by managing issues and through community engagement. So this is a perfect case where I would really encourage you to, you know, file an issue. Let's get it publicized. Let's get a cross-link between the different repositories and start a dialogue, because I think dialogues are really important here. And I share Manu's concern about the potential complexity of globbing, and from a standards perspective, now you get into, okay, well, now what's the regular expression syntax, and, you know, whose regular expression engine do you use? And you know, I've been there, and it rarely ends up well. So something that can avoid that, just as a practical perspective, is a problem. But, you know, maybe there's a middle ground here of something that can be done that, that starts to satisfy these things. Of course, you know, prefixes directly address that issue. They do introduce, you know, this how palatable is that for the different communities. But maybe there's some middle ground of ways to be able to sort of, you know, resolve these things together, and we just need to put the right minds together to brainstorm solution. But I think the group's been quite open to addressing a very novel solutions to these types of issues in the past, and now is a perfect time to start getting people thinking about this.
Well, I would be very happy to open an issue and continue the conversation there, because I think that is the right way to move forward with this. So I'll definitely do that. If y'all can just point me to the right issue board, I'd be happy to start that.
Yep. I'll get it right here. So the issues are linked at the top of the spec, by the way. There's link to get the GitHub repo, the file of bugs. So, for instance, this is the issue. This is where the issues are all stored right now. This will probably change as we move out of a sort of the community group work and into a working group, but that's not likely to happen, say, before June. So,
okay, that's good to know.
Yeah, but you can get to the issues and the test suites and all of that stuff just by looking at the header of the specs.
Okay. You know, I think probably what I'll do after this conversation is sit down with the existing tools and actually look for probably what I would consider a subset, which I could bundle together in a very kind of usable package for my community, which not a subset like an alternative spec, but a sort of set of patterns and libraries and approaches which perhaps would not talk about the prefixes. And if we can make support for the prefixes work okay down the road, that would be one thing. But I think that's where my head's at right now, is that my next step should be to see if I can come up with a really simple, nice-to-use tool or a set of patterns that conform with JSON-LD and reduces the amount that a developer in our ecosystem has to learn prior to becoming compliant with the LD spec.
Yeah,
so that's consistent with what a lot of other groups have done, is they say, look, for using this spec, we're sort of limiting the JSON-LD to a particular dialect that fits with them. For instance, I did some work on publishing CSV as linked data, which uses a sort of a descriptor format that's based upon JSON-LD, although nothing in there actually requires that it be processed as JSON-LD. But to get to some of the extensibility bits of it, we said, that's great. You can add your arbitrary JSON-LD in these various locations, but stick to the following dialect in order to ensure interoperability.
What we've also seen is there have been a number of people that have used JSON-LD as kind of like a back-end language, right? So, developers work through a software library, right? It's just a software library that does manipulation at a high end, but the actual publication of the data – happens in the out the back of the library, right? And that's where so for example, like let's say prefixes are terrible and you don't want to use them, but your developers are like, you know, I'd be okay with like a prefix with an underscore. I hate colons, but underscores are like okay to me. At that point, or like reverse domain notation, like I love reverse domain notation and I'd rather use that than anything else. Like you could always take that input from the developer library and then transform it to JSON-LD in the background and then back again, right? So JSON-LD puts a very high priority on round trippability. Just about every feature is round trippable. And as a result, that means that you can do transformations fairly easily to and from JSON-LD. Again, I mean, it really depends on your developer community if they're okay with that kind of stuff or not.
I guess I really had one other issue that I think is worth mentioning and taking up y'all's time, and that is the question of whether or not namespaces, or rather vocabularies, should use URL identifiers, which I am certain that you are, I would imagine you have discussed this immensely. So, if you want to say just we're not even interested in getting into this, feel free to. But
No, happy to get into it.
Yeah, the question that I have with that is simply whether or not it's I guess I want the people using this tool set to feel very free to make extensions to schemas, and I don't want them to feel like my concern is that they'll say, okay, well, if I'm going to do this the right way, I need to set up a document somewhere and publish it and make sure that I maintain that document. And I think that's a pretty high barrier to something which is a pretty common task, which is that they're going to be adding in a new field. And maybe they're just doing it as an experiment on a whim. And so there's a part of me that thinks, despite the very clear problems that getting away from URLs presents with collisions, no reliable lookup of documentation, there is a benefit to simply saying, choose a string that is long enough that you don't think it'll collide, put your name in it, talk about what, make it nice and long and potentially searchable so that if somebody like Googles it, they'll find your documentation if you publish it, but remove that requirement so that people can feel, so that should be pretty clear. What are y'all's thoughts on that?
So we require, let me think of the right way to say it. So when we first started with JSON-LD, we were like, let's have some like hard-coded global values that are like common schemas, right? Let's just do that. The argument was like, okay, well, like, no, let's generalize to just URLs because publishing a document on the web's pretty easy. Clearly, like that barrier is higher than what you would like. So, totally hear you there. URLs don't have to be HTTP-based, right? So a context, in your terminology, it could be a DAT URL, right? Although those are incredibly long and you don't want to type those things out. Some of the other stuff, we do quite a bit with decentralized ledgers and blockchains today, and now there's this kind of discussion that we're having of like, hey, wouldn't it be cool to have be able to basically make up a name that's globally unique, and if everybody starts kind of using that name, all of a sudden you actually start publishing something there. So the URLs the other thing that happens here is in JSON-LD processors, you can overload the thing that goes out to the network and fetches a document, right? So you can actually put any kind of URI, you could put a URN in there, you could put a UUID in there. And if your JSON-LD processor, has a tiny little shim, like it's like 10 lines of code, you can actually specify a new way of looking up JSON-LD contexts, right? And fundamentally what ends up happening there is it gives you this kind of schema mechanism that you're talking about. It's like, you know, that schema thing that you're talking about, fundamentally it is a namespace of some kind, right? Because everyone has to pick a unique one, otherwise you collide. And all you're saying is like, you know, here's the schema. It exists out there, and I'm not going to define anything in it. Right, on day one, I'm just kind of like, I'm just going to say this is my namespace, and I may put something there in the future, but for right now, you know, forget about it.
Yeah, but you don't even need to go that far. I mean, you can use URNs. In fact, you can use blank
right.
node identifiers, which have their own set of problems associated with them. But just
yep.
having something that resolves to something that can syntactically be considered an IRI. I mean, officially, it's not a URL. There is no
right.
There is no location implied. There is no sense that you might be able to dereference things. That's a separate sort of linked data principle that you should use identifiers that can be resolved and then describe themselves, but. You know, I see JSON-LD as more of an enabling technology for that rather than an enforcing technology. So the key here is that you just use something, and DAT is just fine. A URN is fine. Anything that you want to use for that purpose is fine. As Manna suggested, it might actually be something which is potentially dereferenceable. So you start
yeah,
off
right.
there. There's no assumption that people are going to dereference it. They dereference it. They get a 404 or something like that. And then it later on you say, you know, there is some utility. Maybe we want to formalize and we want to publish an actual vocabulary there, or we want to describe some, you know, metadata on the vocabulary terms, and that would be a natural way to do it.
Yeah. It's for my own knowledge, because this will come up often, if there was just a string used for the identifier with no scheme, so it's not really a valid IRI, what would the consequence of that be?
So that comes from that's kind of like an internet architecture, web architecture question, right? The consequence
right.
is you will never know how to – you will never know – which specification to use to actually dereference that in the future, right? If you talk to, you know, folks that have been in web architecture or internet architecture for 20 plus, 30 plus years, you never want to get into a position where you have no idea what the protocol is that you should use to look up a piece of information. That's fundamentally the issue, and that's why we're saying, like, it really should be an IRI. Like, a URN is totally cool because at least you've contained the damage into a particular area, right,
sure.
versus it being just this kind of global free-for-all name.
Right.
You know,
there's
some other things that have been talked about recently here. The use of sort of document relative properties, which we didn't really handle too well in JSON-LD 1.1, and it really is actually sort of a hardcore RDF issue. But the notion is that I've got a document, and it describes itself, and so why can't the properties that are used in there also be relative to the document, whether they're actually defined within the document or not? And that's something that we're most likely going to add into 1.1. It's basically like a fragment identifier, which gets looked up in the local document. It's sort of a hardcore thing. But, you know, the other
yeah.
way to look at it is, see, what if I defined a property whose ID was just a string, was not a URI, which is, I think, where you came from. And
yeah.
I think as far as I recall, there is nothing that restricts you from doing that. The issue that you would come into is once you start making use of the JSON-LD algorithm. So if you wanted to now recompact that data or expand it or turn it into RDF or frame it or something like that, if it doesn't resolve to something that has a URI pattern, then it's in danger of just being lost. But
right.
If you're just saying, well, this is the surface syntax, which is compatible with JSON-LD, and just deal with it, it's JSON, then, you can certainly do that. It has some long-term consequences, which is why we do make use of URIs for these things, and they're generally considered a best practice. I expect that you would find yourself getting there in the end anyway. But when you're testing things, I think having terms that are relevant to the document, so I publish one, message, and I just use some arbitrary properties that are specific to that message, and I do another message, and maybe I use the same properties, maybe I don't. They can't sort of logically be said to be the same thing, but you can make statements. One of the things that RDF allows you to do is say, well, I've got these two different properties, which I want you to treat as being the same thing or to be related some way. There's some really cool semantics that can be relied on if you get into some reasoning types of tool sets. But, that's sort of putting the cart before the horse. And I think the key is just get people to publish what they mean, and when they are using identifiers that they want to have some well-known interpretation of, then they should use well-known identifiers. And if they're using things that are document-specific, then they might just be within the document. If they're using things that are, library or framework-specific, then that's a perfect use for things like vocab or just something like a URN vocabulary that allows you to do that. Because you can go back and even make these same as types of assertions on URNs as well. It's just you don't have the ability now to easily dereference to do it.
Yeah. Okay. So, we have it's kind of funny that my problem is whether not being sure that engineers are going to take the time to publish their schemas, because what we're trying to do is make publishing easier. But the sort of irony is, I guess the reason I'm not right up there, like, yes, let's just use that and publish them, because you can publish very easily using a tool set, but if you went ahead and minted a new key pair and published to it, but then that doesn't end up being maintained by you, you lose access to the private key, then that URL becomes completely lost for all eternity.
Right.
So I feel like if we're going to push people to do that, then we ought to be having them use short names, which that does support. You can apply a short name to it, but then you're getting into a higher standard for publishing this content.
I don't think you should. I don't think what we're saying is the standard workflow should be that they must publish a context, right?
Yeah.
I think what we're saying is let's try and figure out a way where they don't have to do that, and one mechanism may be just a global context that your properties fall into while you're playing around with stuff. And at the point that you decide that, hey, I really do want interoperability between two applications, it's only at that point where you're like, okay, then I need to get together with a couple of people and talk about interoperability and figure out what the terminology is. But at no point, are we telling the community writ large that they have to use URLs for everything. Like, that should be hidden from 99.9% of the developers, right? And honestly, Paul, the only people that really end up publishing these JSON-LD contexts and these vocabulary documents are people that really understand kind of data semantics and data modeling and things like that. It's a very specialized skill set that goes into building those things. And I don't think it, you know, I don't think it would be good to count on your community's ability to do that, because by and large, 99% of engineers are not, they just don't do that.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. That's exactly my mindset as well. I mean, it's kind of like how people say the original web browsers, one of their greatest advantages was that they were incredibly forgiving about how HTML was
right.
parsed, and if there was, you know, it expected errors. And I think that's kind of the same frame of mind that I'm trying to attack this at, expecting really the minimum from people.
Yep. And fundamentally, that's the same design criteria that went into JSON-LD, right? It may be a little lost in the kind of the formalism of the spec right now, but we want the exact same thing that you do, which is developers should be able to, like, not care and have fun while they're developing it.
Mm.
You know, they should be able to progressively enhance their data. And maybe at some point, you know, one day someone decides, hey, I really want solid interoperability for these sets of messages. It's only at that point do you say, okay, well, publish a JSON-LD context. Let's get a little more formal about it. But then, you know, all the other developers, all they need to do is just do like a simple one-line addition in their data. Or the application does it for them, right? It pays attention to the duck typing, and based on the duck typing and some heuristics, it's like, oh, this is the context I should be using. Right.
Okay. Well, I think I might actually open up an issue for the question of the IRI as well, just to make sure that I get very concrete thinking on that, because I don't want to drag out the conversation longer, but I want to make sure that I know exactly what I'm talking about on that one. So I'll start an issue on the globbing pattern question, or just the general question of how to paint swaths of attributes without using prefixes. And then I have the general tooling work that I'll do, and I think I'll probably just let that play out and stay in touch online. And that kind of covers everything that's on my mind. Is there anything else that you wanted to talk about?
I did have a couple of things that I wanted to kind of throw in here from kind of a larger ecosystem perspective. So, you know, there's a fairly considerable group of us that are trying to decentralize the web, right? I mean, there are people that are working on decentralized identifiers, verifiable credentials, new signature formats, new crypto, to make it easier to do the sorts of things that you're doing. And the thing that many of these projects have in common is this whole linked data JSON-LD thing. Like all the signature suites are built on top of JSON-LD and linked data. As you've probably seen, you know, ActivityPub is built on top of linked data. And we're trying to do it in a way that's not invasive. Like, I totally understand the whole knee-jerk reaction to RDF and linked data. Like, it's really difficult to convey the value add that the technologies have. Particularly, it's hard to get that across to developers that have never had to build interoperable systems, right? It's developers, and this is most developers, right? It's, I am building Twitter, everyone's going to come to my website and they're going to call my API and I'm going to put my API docs up, right? The problem is when you, the more decentralized you get, the less of that assurance you have in the data that's being published and consumed, and the more kind of, unfortunately, the more careful you have to be about, publishing interoperable data. And so we have this, like, we understand that, but, you know, because we've been working on this whole decentralized web problem for so long, you know, we hit the limits of JSON, right? Which is, you kind of have two choices on the table. One of them is you get together for everything that you want to interoperate. You have to get together and create the REST APIs and create the exact JSON output, and then you write a doc and a spec up, and then you publish it. right? And that's how you get interoperability. Or you basically say, look, we need data interoperability. We need to be able to start publishing our data in a way that starts using common tooling. Otherwise, we're going to be stuck in kind of this hellish world where we have to keep getting together at standards bodies and coming up with super specific solutions to really focus problems. And that fundamentally, it doesn't scale. We are unable to scale that any faster than it's going right now. It takes years to do that kind of work. And so what we're trying to do is we're trying to make, data publishing easier, which means, you should be able to lazily publish data. You should be able to kind of upgrade the semantics as you go. You should be able to do digital signatures over that data. JSON's the data format that everyone's using now, but 15 years ago it was XML, and XML's still widely used there. CBOR is now taking over, and people are dropping JSON and for CBOR for things that are a bit lower down on the stack. And the benefit kind of here with JSON-LD is that you can transform it to any other syntax, right? And the benefit of linked data signatures is when you digitally sign linked data, you can express it in a variety of different signatures. So I don't know, you probably haven't gotten into this yet, but a linked data signature can be transformed from JSON to XML to CBOR, and the signature doesn't change. You don't have to re-sign the data, right? Which means that there's this
right.
Exactly, which means that there's this forward extensibility where we're basically saying it doesn't matter what's coming next, right? Maybe the world will go back to XML for whatever reason, but if they do that, we don't have to retool everything. All we have to do is create a new serializer for linked data, and everything else in the stack continues to work.
Right.
The downside there, of course, being that it's a little more complicated, and what we're really trying to do is hide all of that complexity. In the same way that compilers hide the complexity of assembler and machine instructions and architecture and bit length and all that kind of stuff, assemblers, compilers hide that complexity. We're trying to hide that complexity with the JSON-LD tooling now, and we're going up the stack. We're going up to more abstract things like generic signet signing libraries that, take different inputs and outputs as far as the signature formats are concerned. Anyway, that's kind of we're all in this for the same reason. We want to decentralize the web. We want to give people more power. One of the hard things, as you know, about decentralized systems is they're much harder to build than centralized systems, right?
Yes.
So that's why these things are a little more complicated. But hopefully we can figure out ways of hiding a lot of this from developers in the same way that compilers hide assemblers from developers these days.
Yeah, I'm completely in agreement. I think that is the challenge. I think really where the sort of interesting and salient split of mentality comes down to is whether or not precision is the most important, or whether or not we need to have a high degree of precision about this information.
Right.
The communities that we're coming from, which is the Secure Scuttlebutt community and the active developers in the DAT community, they're at the point where they feel that it's kind of, we're just going to rock and roll with duck typing, and we'll come up with ways to solve it down the road, and don't make me come up with very precise solutions that will be looking forward. We just need to be precise enough.
Right.
And so that I think is where the most salient divide of thinking comes from, is not just can we remove complexity, but is there a point at which that actually becomes completely incompatible with the desires of these engineers who are looking for a much more casual experience. And if it does, then they're just not going to do it. And then we get no benefit whatsoever. So that's the challenge. But I feel pretty optimistic. I think we have another round of design work to do to see if we can make this happen.
Okay, fantastic. And anything that we can do to support you in that, please let us know. I don't know if you're on the linked data mailing list, but, that's a good community that provides feedback. We're happy to jump in on issues and provide feedback. We are not insisting that any of the things that you have said are solved problems, right? I mean, the developer mentality is one of the hardest things to figure out, you know, where the right balance is. And this is really a balancing act. There's no right or wrong, you know, answer. And the ground keeps shifting, you know, in each developer community, the ground's slightly different and it shifts. So it makes, you know, a solution that works for all the communities fairly difficult to put together. Happy to help in any way that we can. Please reach out to us if you're scratching your head over how, you know, JSON-LD or, you know, linked data could be kind of refactored to work for what you're doing. And in closing, I also want to invite you to participate in the Rebooting Web of Trust stuff if you can. I know you said, you know, travel is difficult, but we do have some scholarships to help pay, like, offset some of those costs. It's not a lot of money. It's like, you know, $250 here, $500 there. But if there's, you know, I think you would find, you know, that community knows about Secure Scuttlebutt and they are interested in those types of problems. They're very pro, like, decentralized web folks, and they're implementers, right? They're spec writers and implementers. They're not bystanders. These are people actively doing what you're doing, which is writing code, trying to coordinate developers to build a more decentralized web.
Yeah, I would definitely like to participate, so we'll see if we can make that happen.
Okay, awesome. Awesome. Well, with that, thank you, Greg, so much for scribing. I apologize for that, Owen. You saw that you were doing the majority of it, a good jump through. But Paul, I mean, you know, feel free to lean on us for anything you need.
All right. Well, I appreciate everybody's time.
No problem. Have a good one.
Talk to you.
Bye,
okay, bye.
Bye.